Hi, this is Bea Baxter. When you sit as I have in the last half hour, in the presence of greatness, you're left with an inability, really, to use the words you want to. When you have been moved, when you have been shaken beyond normal living, when you want to share the kind of dramatic experience I've been having, then suddenly you find yourself, usually so glib with words, unable to bring them all out. Today's guest is one I present with such pride, such privilege. She's Dr. Mary McLeod Bethune, who, as I'm sure you know, is perhaps the outstanding Negro educator in the known world today. Dr. Mary Bethune has walked with great people. We've seen her pictures ever since I was a little girl. I've seen her pictures with great educators, white and Negro, people of all faiths. But Dr. Bethune has never forgotten what it was like to be the child of slave parents with slave sisters and brothers, and the first mission school 5 miles away from her little cabin in the Carolinas. This kind of feeling of humility, and this kind of feeling of gratitude to the first woman who helped her, is the feeling that's gone through her lifetime so that she has emerged the most outstanding woman of her race. Well, that's the story we're going to hear this day. And I am therefore accepting this privilege, too, from our manufacturers of Glamourine, your rug cleaner, by which you vacuum your rugs. I'm asking the makers of Glamourine this day to give their time for a few moments of it to Dr. Bethune, with this identification only of your dry cleaning compound, Glamourine.
Glamourine, Glamourine, makes rugs bright, makes rugs clean.
Your Glamourine can be bought at food stores, drug stores, department stores, hardware stores, and rug stores. And when you buy it, be sure to ask at the same time for the long-bristled, long-handled Glamourine rug brush. We'll tell you more about Glamourine tomorrow, but I don't want to give up one single moment to talk to Dr. Mary McLeod Bethune. Dr. Bethune is in the Twin Cities today to speak to a group of people at the Radisson Hotel concerning the opening of the United Negro College Fund. The campaign begins this noon. Now, Dr. Bethune, start any place you like. Tell us anything you want to. I'm not going to ask so many questions as I'm just going to sit and watch you.
You're very kind, Bea, to permit me to just sit and commune with you. If there's any one desire in my own heart, that desire is to have the peoples of America and the peoples of the world to know the needs, the cries, the desires of 16 million black people here in this country who are struggling to become first-class citizens so that they may be integrated into the program and services of our great America that we love so well, and be prepared in head, in hand, in heart for the doors that will be opened to them in the todays and the tomorrows as we pass on through life.
You feel that these doors are opening, Dr. Bethune, because of education, yet this is something that concerns me. You appear here for the United Negro College Fund. I know that Negro educators the world over are fighting against segregation, where they want integration in colleges so that white man and black man can go together. Why are you fighting so ardently for your Negro colleges?
really, truly, I believe firmly in the spirit of the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man. I do not believe in segregation and discrimination as such from any angle. But these institutions, in the Southland particularly, where, according to the laws of our several southern states, Negroes are not permitted to go to schools where white children attend, we must continue to do what we can to make as effective and as perfect as we can these doors that are now open so that they can get the preparation they need to stand upon their own feet. And then when the consciousness of men are sufficiently stirred and the spirit of brotherhood sufficiently in action, that all doors may be open as far as equal opportunities are concerned to all peoples, these schools where Negroes alone now study may be so prepared that they may be ready for children of any class or any creed or any color. We cannot afford to let this generation of Negroes grow up with an insufficient amount of education, waiting for the consciousness of men to open the doors sufficiently wide that all may come in. Therefore, we feel that the United Negro College Fund is one of the most important things that we can do in the field of education now to prepare all children to become good, well-equipped citizens of America.
Dr. Bethune, when a Negro boy or girl is educated in a profession, will he then, at this time, in your opinion, be able to use his education for the thing for which he's qualified? Or will it be lost as so many thousands of Negro degrees have been lost because of an inability to get a position for which he is qualified?
I think you are speaking very truly that in many phases of education, we are prepared to enter, but the doors are not yet open. But may I frankly confess to you that I feel that I would rather see my people prepared for the greater things and the unusual things of life when the doors are open than for the doors to become open and they are still on the outside unprepared. Thank God, Ralph Bunche was prepared when the highest diplomatic door was opened.
Dr. Bethune, I would like you to take us back to the time, almost 77 years ago, when you were a little girl in the cabin with your slave parents. And I'd like you to tell us the story of how you, the 15th child of an illiterate slave family, began to learn what learning was.
Oh, that is such a moving story. As I look back over the years, and as I face what is happening today, I can scarcely realize that I have come over such a rugged way. When I remembered myself first, of course, my mother, my father were slaves. My mother continued to cook for her master until she had earned sufficient money to get 5 acres of land upon which our first cabin was built. My father and the boys, when the land was given, went out and felled the forest, got the logs, and built the cabin. And when I came, I was born in our own cabin. As my mother used to say, "Oh, thank God, we are here living under our own vine and fig tree." But there was such darkness. There was no light. There was nobody who could read. In my unusual heart, seemingly, I was very different from many of the other children. There was a yearning for something that I did not know what that was. I used to listen sometimes in the wee hours of the night, and I'd hear my mother down on her knees saying, "Oh God, open doors, make it possible for my children, and not only for my children, but for all of these ignorant children who can't read and can't write." And suddenly, one September morning, a mission teacher came across the cotton field to us and said that the Presbyterian Church had started a little mission school just 5 miles away from our cabin. And she said to my mother and my father, said, "All the little Negro children can go." And my father said to my mother, he called my mother Pat, her name was Patsy. He said, "Pat, we'll send little Mary." I wish you could have seen me that very first September morn with my little brogue shoes, my little tattered shawl around my shoulders, my little pail of milk and bread, walking 5 miles in the morning, 5 miles in the afternoon, trying to learn how to read and write. Oh, when the scales fell off and the light came in, and I could return to the little cabin and give back to my mother and my father, my sisters and brothers, and to the children of the community, the story of what I had learned that day, how I was beginning then, my dear friend, to do the work that I have been doing for the past 50 or more years. It was a wonderful opening. I went from there then to the Social Seminary. A good woman that lived way up in South Denver, Colorado, just like Minneapolis is now from Florida, that area. And she wrote to the mission teacher. She's a poor woman. She's a white woman. She's do school work and sewing in the afternoon. And she said to this mission teacher, "I've been reading about your little mission down there. If you can find a little girl that you think will make good out of the money that I'm earning, I'll give for education." And I was the little girl that was lifted.
This is Dr. Mary McLeod Bethune. My terrible regret only, Dr. Bethune, that we cannot take the rest of this day and for me to watch you and for our very, very lucky and I'm sure at this moment reverential listeners to hear you. My gratitude for bringing part of the story to us. The story that was of such struggle, such travail, and such victory. And all the time, the learning and the loving. Thank you, Dr. Bethune. I'll be back with you tomorrow morning, transcribed at 11:30. Till then, have a good day, will you?